Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and I'm joined by Karen and Brittany. Hey, ladies, what's going on?
Hello.
Hi.
Not much.
not much.
Talking about books.
You know, as we do. All right, so let's start off. What have you guys been reading? I've been traveling a lot, so I did a little bit of reading and a little bit of, like, listening to books while I traveled because it was kind of the easiest way to do it. But what have you guys been up to the last couple of weeks? What have you been reading? Karen, why don't you go ahead and tell us what you've been up to? Because I think you've read some books that you were kind of like in love with.
Yeah, really good stuff this week, actually. I started out with The Red Sun by Elaine Adams, and this has sort of been like a huge one on my list for a while since I heard about it. And it's very much in the same vein as Percy Jackson. It's about this kid who's like a middle schooler, and he finds out that he is a descendant of a Norse god. And it's kind of sassy, like Percy Jackson can be sometimes. It's not exactly the same. You know, it doesn't feel like so close that you're like, wow, this, you know, they ripped him off or anything. But it's definitely like, if you like Percy Jackson, you'll probably like this series. And it was really good. But the best part about this whole series, which I think is called Legends of Orkney, is that it's tied in with a video game. So the author uses her books, or uses the video game, to encourage kids to read as well, because the whole thing is connected and the worlds go together. And like, she had these things at SDCC that I actually didn't get to do, which I was kind of disappointed by, where you could walk around the gas lamp area and like things would pop up on this app and you could like find things and get things virtually. And like, it was crazy. Like, she's designed this entire world around this book series and video game concept, and it's just really amazing. But the book is good, even if you're not into the video game part. And then I read The Looney Experiment by Luke Reynolds, which I was like, I don't know, you know, I'll just read it. It's a short book. We'll see what happens. I actually completely fell in love with it. Probably out of the three, maybe my favorite one. It's about this middle school kid who is really quiet and shy and not really confident in himself. And the substitute teacher comes in, who's 77 years old, and the dude is crazy. His name's Mr. Looney, and he spends, like, their whole first class just staring at them. Doesn't even do anything. Just goes around the room and stares at each one of them individually. And then class is dismissed. And the next day, he's hiding in the closet, and he comes out, and he starts dancing around the room to, like, jungle music and stuff. And it's really funny, but you start, like, halfway through the book, like, you get this teacher is not insane. Like, he's just a really good teacher, and he knows what he's doing. And it gets really emotional because he brings out the best parts of this kid and makes this kid stand up for himself and feel like he's worth something. And by the end of the book, like, it's got this sort of, it's got a very realistic ending, not necessarily a happy ending, but something that I feel like didn't make the world, you know, perfect after this kid who had been bullied this whole book and everything. So it was a good book that maybe like older kids should read. I don't know about the ones that are like 10 or 11 or 12. I think that it depends on the parent, but it was a little dark sometimes. And then lastly, I read Mechanica by Betsy Cornwell. And this is a feminist steampunk Cinderella story, which,
wow.
Yeah, I did not know what to expect from it, but it was amazing. It's about this girl whose name is Nicolette, and instead of being called Cinderella, she's called Mechanica. And her mother was an inventor, and her father sold her mother's inventions all over the world. Her mother died, and then her father gets remarried, and then he dies, and she's left with the stepmother and stepsister. So just like Cinderella. And she slowly but surely like becomes an inventor herself and really wants to show off her talents and not have to do like all the housework around, you know, the household and that sort of thing. And I don't want to give too much away because it's got some really good twists as compared to like the original story. And like, when I say it's feminist, like, it's definitely feminist, and it's not what you think it is in the end. Like, a lot of things are quite different, and it's really nice. So I highly recommend that one if you really like twisted fairy tale stuff. And even if you're not super into it, it's just a really good story. And the whole steampunk vibe of it is something that I really like.
Awesome. Very exciting. I'm glad you really like those. It's hard to tell, like, because we get so many books, and I think sometimes it's hard to, like, pick out what we're going to like and what we're not going to like. And right now, literally, I'm surrounded by, like, three different books right now that I'm reading at the same time. It's no joke. It's happening.
Yeah.
So, because I'm like, I like it, but I need something different right now. Oh, I'm going to try this. Oh, I like this, but oh, I want to go back to this now.
Yeah. Well, we're really lucky because you're really good at picking out things that you know we'll like. And
well, I try really hard.
Yeah, that's really helpful, though, because you're just like, here, you'll like this, and I'll read it and be like, oh my god, this was so good, Jen. So that works out really well. But it's also nice to just pick up something really different and go, wow, I didn't realize that I'd like this, but I'm kind of into it. I want to read more things like this.
Yeah, that's always fun. I'm reading one right now. It's called Cuts Both Ways. And it is by, wait, I have to get it. It's on a different pile than the one that's sitting next to me. I just put it down because I was reading it. It's by Carrie Masrobian. And she was a William Seymour's debut award finalist, which is one of the big awards that they give out in January. And her writing, it's really, really rough and jagged around the edges in a lot of ways. Like, you read it and it's, you know how, like, sometimes you read things and they have super short sentences and it gives you this very specific vibe about the character and how the story is being told. Like, there's a staccato to it that's not in some writing. It's very different. So it's kind of like that. And this story is about a boy named Will. He has divorced parents, and mom lives in a wealthy suburb just outside of town, and dad lives in this house that he's set on remodeling. And his life is pretty kind of mixed up from that. Like, there's a lot going on in just the family situation. And he has friends by where his mom lives, and he has friends at home. And so at home, he meets this girl that he really likes, and he's kind of, like, dating her in a way. And then out by where his mom's house is, he's got this friend named Angus, and they're really close. And Angus is gay, and one night, Angus kisses him. And while he's saying, I'm not gay, at the same time, it doesn't bother him that Angus is kissing him. So it's kind of this, like, coming-of-age story where he's dealing with his sexuality, like, basically being bisexual, and dealing with his family and how that's working out. And it's just a really interesting story to kind of read through this character's point of view. So, and that's not something I would typically pick up and be like, oh, yeah, I want to sit and read this. But it kind of, like, pulled me in, and now I'm, like, stuck in it, and I can't get out of it. I just want to sit and read it and see what's going to happen next. So it's kind of cool. So I just started that. I'm only, like, a third of the way through. And then on vacation, I read Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo. If you guys don't have this on your master plan for September when it comes out, you need to write it down right now.
I was going to say, does it live up to the hype? Because this book has been so hyped since May at PEA.
It's phenomenal. I love Leigh Bardugo. So Six of Crows is this awesome kind of Ocean's 11 superhero-like story. It is so good, you guys. And it's set in a world where her last trilogy took place. So there can be some interconnectivity coming along down the line, because it will be a series. So, yeah. So if you guys were a fan of the Grisha trilogy, this is kind of interconnected, but not heavily. But there's the opportunity for others from that world to kind of come into play later on. So it was, I loved it. So September, you guys, September is when you want to be on the lookout for that. It's something you're going to want to read. And the other book I'm working on, or I'm almost done actually, is called Truly, Madly, Famously, and it's by Rebecca Searle. And it's the second book in the Famous in Love it's a series. So the first book is called Famous in Love. And this one is so, it's kind of like fangirl for me, because it's about this girl, Paige Townsend, who lives in Portland, and she wants to be an actress. She's 17. She wants to be an actress. She's, you know, that's what her passion is. And she goes to an audition for the latest and greatest novel, YA novel, being turned into a movie. And she lands the role. And she kind of gets swept up into now you're the next big thing. What do you do with that? And, you know, then she's uncertain if she's really going to be an actress and how that's going to work out. And then she has these two co-stars. One of them's like kind of really sweet and kind, and he's, you know, the big Hollywood actor and everyone knows, and he kind of, it looks like he's got feelings for her. And in the actual book that takes place within the story, there's a love triangle, and it kind of starts to form within the novel as well, but not in the same way you would think. So it's pretty interesting. I loved it. I feel like it's kind of realistic in a lot of ways when you read it. And in the second one, there are things that happen in the first one that have to work themselves out in the second one. And it's really about Paige growing and learning about the business and learning about who you can and can't trust. And so it's just really interesting to me to read, you know, that kind of thing. So I really liked it. It's a lot of fun. So that's what I've been doing reading wise. How about you, Miss Brittany? What have you been up to?
I've been reading one book that Jen sent me to review. So I had the wonderful privilege of reading Lair of Dreams before all of you people get to read it tomorrow, August 25th, when it hits the shelves, and it's fantastic. It took me a little while to get back into it because I had to remember, I was like, I had to actually go back to the Diviners and kind of refresh myself on what was going on where we last left off. And you definitely don't have to do that with Lair of Dreams, but I kind of recommend it because I kind of forgot a lot of stuff about Jericho and things that were going on, but it's really good. There's a couple new characters and a new problem, but there's also this huge, like, creepy overarching, like, villain that sort of just stays in the background, and you know that there's just going to be more revealed as more books come out. So it was really, really good. It's very long, I will say that. It's not going to take you an afternoon. It's going to take you maybe two afternoons or a weekend to get through. But it was really good. I don't know how she manages to make all of the characters so interesting and keep them interesting and relevant throughout the whole thing without losing track of them. It's just, she's amazing. So yes. Pick it up. Lair of Dreams.
Tomorrow. I didn't realize it was that big when I put it in the box for you. Like, I was like, oh, it's a thick book, but like I didn't really register until like you like tweeted at me. You're like 690 pages.
And I should say that she did this and put the new Once Upon a Time book in there that I could not read until I finished Lair of Dreams. So now I'm going to read the Red's Tale. So
I'm such a mean boss, what can I say? Like, you need to read this, but you can't read that one first.
It's just sitting on my nightstand staring at me, along with a book that Marima brought all the way from Australia, and I can't read that either. Well, now I can. So
now you can. Now you're free. You don't have any other, you know. Although I do have a few more things to send you now that I'm looking at the piles of books sitting around me.
I gotta read fast. It's
okay. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I got home. Okay, can I tell you? I got home from my vacation and there were 21 packages in my living room.
Ugh.
I was like, I texted Karen. I'm like, so I'm like, I may have some things to send you because I have like a wall of books sitting in my house right now. It's all good. It's all good. So, yeah, good times. So, I mentioned this the last time. I had gone on vacation to England. I was in London and Scotland, and I went to Paris for a couple days. But for all of you Outlander fans, when I was in Scotland, I was with Laura Covers Outlander for Hypeable, and we kind of traveled all around because Laura wanted to see some of the places that they filmed. And so we got lots of cool pictures of really old castles, and it's really cool to see how they film the shots, because in some of the places, like, you get this gorgeous, glorious castle shot or, like, an interior of a castle, but you don't realize the whole back half of the castle is a ruin. There's no roof. There's no floor. There's crumpled brick everywhere. Like, you're like, wow, the magic of TV is fascinating when you kind of get on a set like that. So we did that, but can I tell you, in every single gift shop, in every single castle in Scotland, there is Outlander merchandise. Every single one. So I'm like, it was really, really funny to see, like, the Outlander books and then, like, Jamie t-shirts and, like, all kinds of stuff all over the place. I thought it was really interesting to see how quickly Scotland has adopted Outlander as, like, their thing and put it in every, like, gift shop imaginable in the countryside. So that was a good time. And a couple other fandom-y not exactly book related things that I did. I got to see Benedict Cumberbatch in Hamlet, which was phenomenal.
Whatever, Jen.
Not just because he was in it, but can I just tell you guys? Because I'm going to write up about it for Hypo. I just haven't had time. Like, I just flew back home and stuff. But, like, he was wonderful. And I love seeing him in a role that wasn't, like, Sherlock or wasn't very, like, cerebral. So he didn't have to play the smart, like, unconnected guy. Like, Hamlet's very different. That's not Hamlet at all. So it was so fascinating to see him in something other than that. But what was even better was, like, just the atmosphere of the theater. The people who put this production together, it is stunning. The whole, there's, like, the very first scene, they're at, like, the dinner, where it's the, you know, Mama Hamlet and her new husband, who is the uncle, and they're all at dinner celebrating. But that, the, like, the set for that was just absolutely amazing. It was so detailed and intricate. It could, like, it just, it blew me away. I couldn't believe how just pretty everything was for this.
Yeah, the National Theater is unbelievable, because I saw him and Johnny Lee Miller did Frankenstein, and I saw both versions just in a theater, like a normal, like a movie theater. And I'm going to see Hamlet, actually, October 17th,
I was
going to
say, doing it, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it, so I got tickets to see that. But the same thing, though, the production value of Frankenstein was gorgeous. Like, it was so cool.
Just wait till you see the set design for this. Like, it is.
Yeah, I'm excited. As soon as I saw the tickets go on sale, like, because they play them all the time at, like, a university around here, my mom and I just bought them.
Yeah, no, it's so good. It's just so pretty. Like, there's so many things about it that were so cool and so pretty, and the lighting is really cool. And so it was amazing. I loved it. And I've seen lots of plays and stuff, but I'm not someone who knows a lot about theater, whereas Laura, like, does a lot of theater stuff. So she was like, oh my God, the lighting. And she just went on and on about it. But, like, everything they do was so, like, very, like, specific. And it definitely set, like, the music they use and this, you know, every little thing was just so good. And, of course, he was fantastic. But, like, it was just such a cool thing to see. And we also saw Gypsy. When we were in London, and Gypsy, isn't Gypsy?
On. Yeah, I know. You are. I'm just so jealous.
I know. So Imelda Staunton was in Gypsy. She was the lead. She was Mama Rose. And she was in Harry Potter, and I can't remember the name of her character. She was the crazy cat lady with the pink outfit. Who did she play?
Umbridge?
Thank you. I can't.
Sorry, I was on mute. I thought I wasn't on mute.
I could not remember her name for the life of me, and I'm like, I know exactly who she is. I know exactly how horrible she was. And I can't remember the name of that character. So she was Umbridge in Harry Potter. So this was kind of like the fandom meets theater trip as well, because she was in it. Laura Pulver played Gypsy, and she was in Sherlock. And then, and she was Irene Adler. And then Peter Davison, who was one of the doctors, I'm not going to say which number because I know I'm going to forget, he was also in it. So it was really cool to, like, see all these people, and just, it was a lot of
fun. I saw that cast list, and I was like, this is the worst. I'm just sitting here, and Jen's going to come back.
Oh. Well, no, like, because we were trying to be like, oh, what else, you know, what other shows or whatever can we see in London? And Laura had looked at it. She's like, oh, yeah, that lady from Harry Potter's in it. I'm like, Laura, there's a doctor and Irene Adler in it as well. And she's like, oh, I'm like, we're going to see Gypsy.
I didn't even look at, I just saw that you guys were seeing Gypsy, and I was already upset. And then I read the cast list, and I was like, come on!
We just got really lucky.
No, you really did.
Yeah, it was a good, so we did some really cool things like that, which was really exciting to kind of, like I said, to visit the sets where Outlander was really cool. And I love Scotland. I've been to Scotland before. Laura had never been, and so she, like, I've driven on the opposite side of the road before because I lived in Australia, but Laura's never done it, and she decided she was gonna do it. So it was really interesting to have her drive on the opposite side of the road, but she was very determined to get to all these, like, Outlander places and stuff. So it was a lot of fun. So have you guys been doing anything fun or fandomy related in the last couple weeks?
Not really. I don't think I've done. Nope. No, I haven't really. I've
had nothing. Come on.
Nothing fandom related. I mean, I went to a first birthday party, but other than that, I haven't really.
Okay, can I tell you, this weekend is my nephew's third birthday party, and this is so off topic. I'm really sorry, listeners, but you get a kick out of it. It's my nephew's third birthday party, and he's like, Auntie, we all have to be superheroes. So we're basically having like an Avengers theme party where literally you can't come in the door unless you're dressed up. So like we literally sat around because I just got back. My sisters and I sat around and ordered like every costume under the sun yesterday on Amazon so that we can all have costumes. And then we went out and bought all the party favors. So essentially we're throwing like an Avengers birthday party where my entire family will be dressed up as someone from the Avengers. We even got the dog whose name is Groot. Mind you, as in from Guardians of the Galaxy. But we didn't get him a Groot costume. He's going to be Thor. So the mini bulldog is going to be Thor. And then everyone else is going to be like the Hulk or Captain America or, yeah.
Iron Man?
Yes. One of them is going to be Iron Man.
Okay, good.
Yep, I'm going to be Hawkeye because I found a cute Hawkeye t-shirt and I can like sling a bow and arrow over my shoulder and call it a day. So it's gonna be kind of crazy, so very fandomy and fun, but my little nieces and nephews are very much into the Avengers, so they are like all about it. It's a little intense right now. Well, I'm a little afraid. So anyway, let's move on to some book things, because I feel like this is book hype and maybe we should talk about some books. I don't know, seems fair. So as you guys know, we announced that our August book for Book Hype is going to be Legacy of Kings. And today we found out that Legacy of Kings has been optioned by Warner Brothers TV, which is kind of exciting. And not only Warner Brothers TV, but Simon Helberg as well is going to produce it. And for you guys who don't know who that is, he is Wolowitz on The Big Bang Theory. I had no idea he was into like producing and optioning things. And no idea that was part of him, but he's totally on top of this. And so it is headed to Warner Brothers TV, which most likely means the CW, which is kind of exciting. So if you guys haven't read The Legacy of King yet, it's about a young Alexander the Great. It's written by Eleanor Herman. And Karen and I both met Eleanor Herman at BEA this past spring. And she is like a hot ticket. She's so funny, you guys. And it kind of translates really well into her work. A, she's a historian. She's been on, like, the History Channel on different shows talking about all this historical stuff, which, more power to her, because history and I were never friends. But it's super exciting because she takes all this really strong historical knowledge and puts it in a novel about a young Alexander the Great, but infuses it with all this magic and romance and all these things that you really couldn't ask more for. Like, it's just such a good compilation of things. So I hope you guys really like it. It was a really nice read. I liked it a lot. And it's really exciting. I really hope it goes through as a show for Warner Brothers TV, because I think it will make a really cool show. It's got a Game of Thrones-esque vibe to it because of the time period it's set in and the things that are going on. But it has the potential to be really, really cool and successful. So
I'm just super into the idea of this being a TV show or any book being turned into a TV show now, because while I love film a lot and I love adaptations, you can do so much more with TV. I mean, you could potentially get like 22 or 24 hours as compared to like two, or even if you get a couple of sequels, you're always going to have more time to explore that story on television, and especially this really like high fantasy, like deep story, very detailed world kind of stuff is perfect for television. That's why I'm so excited about the Shannara Chronicles coming to MTV, because that is a huge book series that has like 20 books now or something crazy like that. And, you know, if it does well enough, it could potentially be on screen for years and years and years. And you get to explore the book and be more faithful to it when it's on television. You get all that time.
Yeah, and I think I was talking to Karen a little bit about this last night, actually. The second half of Hannibal season is sticking really close to the Red Dragon narrative that Thomas Harris wrote, and it has been phenomenal. Like, it is so good, but I think it has to do with the fact that they have 6 hours to do it as opposed to 2.5, where like the other movies have done. So I think it's just so good.
Right.
I agree. More hours is good.
Yeah. I think that's always been the case in a lot of ways with books. Like, and I think for the longest time, things weren't being adapted to TV and it, you know, it just wasn't happening. And now more and more, I think we're seeing these really large sweeping series like the Game of Thrones being adapted for television. And I think Warner Brothers TV has had a lot of success with adapting young adult novels to TV. You have the Vampire Diaries, and no, it didn't stick to script, but it's still been really successful. We have, they've adapted comic books like Arrow and The Flash. They've adopted The 100, which as a book series, yeah, it's good, but I think a lot of what they're doing on TV is even better. I know Selena is like all about it. Like she's so detailed about everything about that, and people love it. So I think there's a lot of things to be said for adapting these YA novels to television. I mean, the Pretty Little Liars series, if you look at that for ABC Family, that's done phenomenally well as well. You know, it's had a lot of years and you can get more out of it. You can play with it a little bit more. You can expand on maybe a secondary character that everybody loved, but you can't get enough of it. And that's why I'm really excited as well that The Shadowhunters is being adapted into a TV series rather than that one movie that I think
I knew we weren't going to get through this podcast talking about The Shadowhunters.
Sorry. Well, it was just a comparison.
I actually, when we were like, what news is out there? I was like, huh, there's nothing really from Shadowhunters. I was thinking that because I was like, there has to be something.
Well, here's the thing. They put up a lot of like images and stuff like on the weekly basis, but I can't really report, like, I can see an image and that's awesome, but I have absolutely no idea what the context is of the image, so I could speculate on it, but, so if there's big news, if there's casting or something, it's good to report on, but, like, reporting on every single image they put out would be really hard, so.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, it was just as an example, that's one of the things that, that, you know, ABC Family is also very much into adapting these, you know, YA novels into television, so. I hope it works out. I really do. I'm kind of really excited about it. I think it has a lot of potential. So I guess we'll see where it goes from there. So I don't know. We'll see. All right, Miss Karen, this next one's all yours because it's Percy Jackson's Greek Heroes.
Woo! Yes, on August 18th, which is Percy Jackson's birthday, Percy Jackson's Greek Heroes came out, and this is the companion novel to Percy Jackson's Greek Gods, and it is, if you guys aren't familiar, a coffee table-sized book written by Rick Riordan in Percy Jackson's voice explaining not all of the myths, but a lot of the big myths, and in this particular case, like the Greek heroes. And it's got beautiful art by John Rocco, as per usual, and it is just a gorgeous book. And actually, for some reason, I thought this was a lot more expensive than it actually is. It's only $25. Like, you can get some hardcover regular books for that price. I thought this was going to be like $40 or $50, but it's only $25. Yeah, so it's
really? Okay.
Yeah.
Because the, what are the other ones? The Harry Potter ones that we get, the coffee table ones, are like $50.
Yeah, they are. And I thought this one was going to be, but it's only $25. So definitely worth the money. The images are stunning. Absolutely beautiful. I mean, just the cover itself is amazing to look at and really cool to like throw on a table or a bookshelf where you can really display it. But it's the reason why I love these is, one, you get sassy Percy Jackson, which is the best Percy Jackson. And two, he writes these from Percy Jackson's point of view, but everything he says is true to the mythology that you would read in those stuffy old books that make you want to fall asleep. So he said, when we interviewed him like last year about Greek gods, he said, I want you to be able to read this book and get an A+ on an exam, which I just think is really awesome because it's bringing these stories that I love. Like, I have so many reference books about Greek gods and heroes and all the mythology that some of them are a little more boring than others, but I just love that it's bringing it to a new generation of people who love Percy Jackson because they can relate to this kid who has ADD, who has you know, trouble in school and that sort of thing. And now they're getting into the history side of it. And I just think when it's twofold like that, it's just amazing. So highly recommend it. It's just as good as the first one.
That is awesome. I love it. Can I tell you, in England, the book doesn't look the same. It's just a paperback book.
What?
It's not a coffee table book. I know, because I was looking, like, I went into a couple different bookstores, because you know when you're in a different country, they have really cool covers, and there's, like, lots of different things you can look at. So I was just going in to see if there's anything that caught my eye or anything I really liked, and all the Percy Jackson covers are different. They're not the same. And then I noticed, I was like, wait a minute. I'm like, no, that's not this. That can't be the same book. And I picked it up, and I looked through it, and it was. And I was like, oh, this isn't okay. Like, part of the beauty of that particular book is that it's a coffee table book with all those gorgeous images and everything. So I was like, oh, that's sad.
Did it not have any of John Rocco's artwork?
No, no, none of it. It's all, it's just a paperback book.
Oh, that's okay. Definitely get the U.S. version, because clearly it's the best.
It just, it's prettier. I don't know. I liked it. It's prettier. So I don't know. But yeah, I was really surprised because I was like, oh, this is sad. I feel bad. But yeah, I don't know. So, and then of course, within the upcoming month of September, we're going to have a lot of things for Magnus Chase because, well, he arrives in October and we're all very, very excited about what Magnus Chase might bring to the table.
The anticipation.
Mythology.
Yeah. The anticipation is so high. It is ridiculous. I can't even begin to tell you, but I'm really excited. That's going to be our October book. I haven't told anybody else yet, but...
Well, I feel like it should be. I feel
it has to be.
I feel like Magnus Chase deserves his own month. Like, it should happen.
And Brittany...
Is this a series? Do I have to read a whole
series? It's the first book in the series, Brittany. Okay, first book. You're good. You're good.
Perfect. See? So it's awesome. Like,
oh my gosh, do I have to read all of Percy Jackson before?
To read like 10 books.
That's just Karen's preference. You don't actually have to.
Listeners are probably all caught up, but this is going to be really taxing on me. This is like when I decided to take on Hannibal 2 weeks before the premiere and had to watch 2 seasons worth of Hannibal.
We wouldn't do that.
Dreaming of Greek gods instead of murders.
Well, in this case, it's Norse mythology, so it's Loki yeah, that sort of stuff. So we'll see. It's the first in the series, so you do not have to worry. You're okay.
You should probably watch Thor.
Oh my god, what did you just say?
Well, I've seen Thor. I haven't seen it too.
Okay, I was like, wait a minute, I'm sorry.
Or the Avengers. I should watch that too, I guess.
How did you exist on Hypeable and have not seen the Avengers?
You don't notice about me? I've only seen Thor and Iron Man 1 and parts of Iron Man 3.
Karen, we need to have an intervention.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before.
I don't think I knew this because I think I probably would have, like, imploded.
Yeah, I make it. I get by on Hypeable without it.
Do you just not tell people?
Yeah, I just don't talk about it. Whenever something happens and everyone's like, news, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go over here now.
Oh my goodness.
I don't watch any of the CW shows. I don't do any of that. I don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Arrow. I don't do the Index Club, as I call it myself.
Oh, Brittany. Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm trying to, like... process that right now. It's taken me aback. I didn't realize that you...
It's like Laura. Laura isn't into any of the superhero stuff either, and I just, like, I'll turn to her to, like, talk to her about something, because she's a huge fandom person. Like, she loves fandom, and I just figured, you know, Marvel, basically the biggest fandom there is, and I'm like, I can't talk to you about this. This is very strange.
Yeah, it's very odd. I don't get it either. I don't know. So yeah, okay. I'm done with that now. So we're gonna give you a shot with Magnus Chase, even though you haven't read Percy Jackson. We'll start you off slow.
Percy Jackson, and you'll go back, or like maybe you'll like Magnus, and you'll go back and want to read Percy Jackson.
Yeah, I have nothing against Percy Jackson. It's just it's an undertaking if I start.
Yeah, that's true.
So. I get it.
Maybe Christmas break or something.
I was going to say, you need like a good solid vacation with you and just some books and maybe a beach.
That's what Merrima did. She read, like, all 5 Percy Jackson books within a few days. I mean, she's, like, crazy fast anyway. But she was like, yeah, I just finished, like, books 2 and 3. And the next day she'd text me and be like, I just finished 4. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Okay.
They're pretty quick reads, though. They're not, like, do you know what I mean? Like, the way they're written, they're pretty quick. I like the way Rick Riordan writes. It's really accessible and really quick to kind of read through, so...
Yeah.
There's that. It's a bonus.
If you do read them, I demand live texting.
Okay. I can make that happen.
Can I just tell you guys, Karen, you didn't tell them about the book you've been reading. The scary one.
Because I haven't finished it yet. But
okay.
I will report more on it next week when I do have it finished, but I will say that I've been asking Jen to give me some scary books lately because I've just been really getting into, like, the horror genre, and maybe that was a terrible idea because I read, like, the first 100 pages of this book. It's called The Dead Girls of Hysteria Hall, and it's really good, but it's terrifying. I was like, how scary can a book be? I was up at, like, 2 in the morning, and I was like, man, I really have to pee, but, like, I don't want to get out of bed right now because it's dark out there, and there are going to be ghosts, and they're going to kill me, and it was really scary, but it's good. It's really good.
Karen, tell everyone about the book that you have that I want so badly.
Okay, so I went to a used bookstore, like a thrift store the other day, and there, okay, this place is the best place in the world. You can buy, what is it, one book, buy one, get two free.
I'm sorry, what now?
Buy one book, get two free, either paperback or hardcover, and it's like $1 for paperbacks and $2 for hardcover.
Oh my God.
They're basically either 33 or like 66 cents each. Okay. I came home with 25 books.
Karen.
I paid $4.75.
Oh my God.
For 25 books. Yeah. I don't need that many books. But anyway, the best part is this one book that I had to buy is called Anonymous Rex. And it is about a velociraptor detective who wears a latex human suit and has an addiction to basil. And his partner was killed, and he has to go figure out, like, what happened to him. And he has, like, trouble hiding his tail in his latex suit. And all, like, I swear to God, this book is real.
It is though, because she tweeted about it, and I immediately inquired as to what was actually going on, and then I had to look it up for myself, and it's real.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's so beautiful. I cannot wait to read it.
Oh my gosh. I'm a little jealous about that bookstore, I'm not gonna lie. It's probably for the best, though, because, man, I would be living in a house of books if I got any more books.
You already do live in a house of books. I don't think you need any more.
Have you guys seen on, like, Pinterest and stuff, those chairs that they make, and they're, like, little mini libraries, and they're made out of, like, books? Like, I think we should become crafty.
That's true.
What kinds of things can we make out of books? Or to hold books, because that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I have, like, 10-foot ceilings in my new place.
And, oh, I'm jealous.
I mean, I'm not even 6 foot, so let's say, like, I have, like, 2 feet of space where I should just get, like, bookshelves to line, like, my ceiling or something and just have, like, a step stool that I can get up to them. Like, I would have so much more room for books.
That would look so cool.
You can get, like, one of those, like, ladders from Beauty and the Beast and just swinging and singing in your house.
Of course, we're going to need a video of that. Yeah. But, you know, it needs to be recorded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll get back to you on that.
All right, so here's some more news. The New York Times bestselling list, you guys know this is my favorite topic ever, not, has finally changed how it is representing young adult novels on its lists. As many of you know, it wasn't until Harry Potter actually hit and dominated the New York Times bestselling list that there was even a children's list section. It didn't exist before that. But when Harry Potter dominated and no other author could hit the list, there became an issue and people got cranky. So it was then changed to include a children's list It did not contain a YA list. It was just children's. And then it became children's NYA, and then it became children's or picture books, middle grade YA. And now, to tease it out even further, they've added paperbacks in a separate category. So I think it just started this week is the first week they've got a list that includes it includes ebooks as well. So this is the first week that has ever included all of the different categories. So instead of there just being like three categories that included YA, there are now children's books in general, there are now like eight. So what this does is it opens up the list in a really big way. So instead of John Green dominating the entire list because all of his books are selling really well, or instead of a book like 13 Reasons Why or The True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, which always hit the list really big around going back to school time because they're books that are covered in English classes, those are now, because they can be bought in paperback, on a paperback list, and then any new releases are more than likely to kind of fill into the regular hardback list. I'm kind of excited for this because I think it's going to give people who sell really well in their opening first weeks and books that do really well more of a shot of actually making the list than previous, when it was just the one category and you had people, like I said, who were on, you know, school reading lists or things like that who just dominated it because we're selling paperbacks and not hardbacks. And so I think it's really interesting that they finally decided to do this. I'm kind of really excited about it. What do you guys think about it?
I was like, this sounds like a good thing. Like, I was expecting it to be bad because, you know, they always screw up, like, the way that they're doing the bestseller stuff. And, like, we're always disappointed in how things keep coming back and it doesn't allow for, like, newer people to get on there who have really incredible books but might be bumped off because of, you know, John Green and stuff like that, although clearly not his fault. But, yeah, this sounds like an amazing thing, actually, the way that they're splitting it up with the paperbacks and everything. So I'm down for it.
Yes. And they also, I'm trying to read through to make sure I'm getting it right, but it sounds like they also rearranged how they're doing the series books. So if your book is part of a series, then it automatically falls into the series category. Whereas before, you had to have three books released before it went into the series category. And the only reason I'm saying that is because Descendants, which is by Melissa De La Cruz, it's the prequel to the Disney movie that just came out, is the number one book in the series section. Whereas, because there aren't any other books out in that series yet, it really should have been in the hardcover section, but I don't know. So that part is still a little confusing to me, but we'll see. But, like, this week alone, there are a ton of books. Like, if you look at the list, there are a bunch of books that are hitting the list for the first time, because of the way the list is restructured, which is really cool.
So are they just counting, they're counting all books in a series as the series? So, like, because it's listing Maze Runner, it includes, like, Scorched Trials and Percy Jackson and the Olympians is just all of them.
Yes.
So they combine the sales of all of them to rank them.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, because that makes sense as to why Land of Stories would be up there.
Right, yeah, Land of Stories is another one that doesn't normally hit. So I think it's really interesting. Like, in the past, it hasn't really shown up on a lot of lists.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that that's on there. I think what I think is really interesting is that Harry Potter is sitting at number 5. Because Harry Potter hasn't been on the list in ages. So I think it's
I guess they might be counting the new paperback editions, too.
Probably.
They've been released individually, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, when this happened, all of a sudden, like, my Twitter feed, like, blew up with people congratulating Rainbow Rowell. And I was like, did I miss, like, when Carry On came out? Like, I got so confused. They're like, congratulations on your number one New York Times book. And I'm like, what? What do you mean your number one New York Times book? But it was because they rearranged it and Eleanor and Park went on number one and then Fangirl became number 8. So I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, because Eleanor and Park was always, I think one of them had made number one before. I think I could be wrong. But the problem was, at the same time, all the John Green novels sat at the top.
So yeah, like, you would have, especially because, like, he had, like, movies paperback and the movie adaptation paperback and
Yeah.
Like the hardcover, it was crazy. Just looking at that list, because they have an example from 2014, but they just had, like, it was 3 John Green books, which were all The Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah.
And then Divergent, Insurgent, Allegiant, because those movies were huge that year. They're not that good anymore, but...
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about this, and I can't kind of wait to see how, like, when, as the newer books, like, this fall, there are a ton of new really hot titles coming out that I'm excited for, and I can't wait to see how they kind of play out with the list and stuff, because the list has always been this puzzling thing for me. Like, we watch books sell really well, we watch everyone talking about them, and yet they never make the list. So it'll be really interesting to see if this now plays a difference in how things work out.
Yeah, so. And the authors, because they have, in this article, they have all the authors who had tweeted about it, and they're all really excited, too, so that's
yeah. Good. I mean, I just think it's nice to give people a chance. Like, it's so discouraging, I think. I would feel discouraged if, you know, I had a new book come out and it did really, really, really well. And the numbers should have been enough to make me a New York Times bestselling list. But because you have these books that have been out for years and years and years, and they're just continuously adding to the same sales. Like, that was always my big thing. How does a novel that's been out for 13 years sell more than a book in the same week, because that's all they base it on, as a book that's just come out and everyone's buying? I don't get it. I don't understand that and how it's possible.
Yeah.
So maybe this will work with that a little bit. We'll see, I guess. So listeners, let us know what you think about this, because I'm really curious, because this whole New York Times bestseller list has always been one of those weird things that we always kind of get into talks about. So I'm really curious to know what everyone else is thinking too. All right, on to a little bit of controversy. Have you guys ever read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo or watched the movie or any of those things?
I've seen the movie.
I've seen both versions of the movie.
Ooh, fancy.
I've only seen the American one that's on HBO sometimes.
Yeah. Actually, the original, like, they're both incredible, equally incredible. I love both of them a lot. I own the whole series. I've not yet read any of the books.
All right, so the latest book in the Millennium series, which was originally written by Stieg Larsson, however, he passed away in 2004. What's happened is someone's been allowed to take over his books. So The Girl in the Spider's Web will be written by David Lagercrantz and will be published August 27th worldwide, except for in the United States, where it will hit shelves on the 1st of September. So people are a little bit, I don't know, they're a little bit kind of like, I don't know about this. So it was announced in 2013 that this book would be coming out. And so the idea of the series continuing without Stieg Larsson, they don't like it. It's like readers are unhappy about it. They're a little bit nervous about it. So I don't know. What do you guys think? There was no really long-term plan for the book past the 3 books. So, I mean, he had started to write the 4th book. So they had this other guy kind of finish it, I guess, so that they could publish it. So what do you guys think about that? Like, I don't know. It's an odd situation.
I don't really think it is an odd situation, actually, because this has been done a lot. And first of all, fans being upset, I totally get. You know, you want to be loyal to the author and to the original books, and I completely understand that. And I think it's fair as a fan to just be like, you know what? Do whatever you want to do, but these 3 books are by the original author. These are the books for me. I'm not going to read the new ones. That's fine. Just leave it at that. For people who love this story, don't really feel that way, and want to continue seeing these characters develop, they can pick up the new series. I'm sure it's going to feel loyal to the original stories. Like, it might not be exactly the same because a different person is writing them, but it's going to be similar. It's like all of the Sherlock books. Like, I mean, there are a lot of people now who are writing Sherlock books. Obviously, it's not by the original author, yet it still feels like it's true to the characters. And I actually just ran into this the other day because I really love Brandon Sanderson. And when I was at that bookstore, I saw that he had written this book with this other author, and I was like, okay, I've never heard of this. What is it? Well, it's the Wheel of Time series, and it's by Robert Jordan.
Yeah.
And, you know, for people who don't know, Robert Jordan, who's real, that's his pen name, he died in 2007, and he was planning on writing book 12 of this series, and it was supposed to be the last one, but he died. He had really extensive notes, and Brandon Sanderson, who was this giant fan of the series, he was going to finish it, and he ended up writing it, but they decided that it was too big for one book, so they split it up into three books. So there's three additional books in the series, and then I think it's done now. But, you know, kind of the same case, whereas this series, which had already had 11 books previously and probably a huge following, had somebody else take over for it. And not to say that fans of that probably weren't upset as well, but I feel like, you know, this sort of thing has been done before, and you can either choose to continue the series because you love the characters and you don't mind that a fan of the series, who's also an author, could finish writing it, or you can just be like, you know what, that's okay, I'm just gonna let it go and be happy where it's ended with the original author.
Yeah, I think the difference is, whereas that author had left a bunch of extensive notes and it was already planned out, this wasn't planned out. Like, there's a quote from his from his partner, and she said that Steve didn't have a long-term plan for the series like the publishers claimed. Everyone thinks there was some grand scheme, but no, he had no plan for the first three books, and then when he started writing the fourth one, it was spontaneous. He still didn't have a plan. So I think that's where the questionability comes into it. It's, what is a publishing house willing to do to get the book as compared to what was the intention of the author? Clearly, in the Wheel of Time series, this author had intention to continue to write the series and write the books, and he had well laid out notes, and all of that stuff was there. This was just a guy writing down, you know, continuing a story for himself. It doesn't necessarily ever mean it would have been published, or that there was anything to guide how that story was going to turn out. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah, that's
I see your point. I definitely see your point. Because The Bourne Identity is a series of books, and the same thing has happened where the authors have changed. So I totally get that. But in this case, it feels, again, like a little bit like it did with Harper Lee, where it was questionable, where the motives of the publishing house were questionable. It kind of feels that way again.
Yeah, I get that, because I really have to wonder, like you said, how far are the publishers willing to go just to make a buck on the series that already has established fans? So they know it's going to sell. You know, there's no question of that. I, like, in the case of Brandon Sanderson, he was a huge fan of the books, and so that's why he was, you know, paid or whatever to take it over, why he decided to take it over. Do we know how this person who's taking over the Millennium series?
It doesn't say. I'm reading the article we have up on Hypeable, and it doesn't have that information. So I have the quote and stuff like that, but
yeah.
I don't know exactly how he became a part of it, just that he did. So, I don't know. But I guess it'll be interesting to see how fans react and if this book lives up and can still be contained as part of the Millennial series or Millennium series, or if it's going to feel too different. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll be interested once I finally get around to reading the original trilogy to pick up the fourth book and see, as somebody who's just read them and is a completely new fan, if it will feel different to me.
Should be very, very interesting. All right, so ladies, do you have anything else for this episode of Book Hype?
Going to the National Book Festival on Labor Day weekend.
Ooh, what's going on at the National Book Festival?
You know, I haven't really paid attention or looked into it too much. I just found out the other day that I would be there because I have my fantasy football draft in Washington, D.C.
As you do, Brittany, as you do.
It's a very important day of my year, and it just so happens that the book festival is the same weekend, so this is the first time that it's coincided with that trip. So I'm excited. I know Libabre is going to be there. and what's his name? Steven. His name is, I can never pronounce his last name. He is the comic artist of the strip Pearls Before Swine, which is my favorite Sunday comic. And he's presenting at like 9 o'clock at night. So I'm going to go, but I'm very excited to see him. And I'll probably go to Lib Abre. They each have like a presentation and then a signing.
Oh, that's cool.
So that'll be cool to go there and just see some people. I think I'm just going to play it by ear, you know, just show up and
see what happens. That's always fun.
Get some swag or something.
Yeah, you know. There's also the Decatur Book Festival going on Labor Day weekend, which is in 2 weeks, down in Georgia. So that's always a massive, gigantic festival. So that's also a really cool one to check out if you're in that area. Lots going on down there. Meg Cabot will be at Decatur, which is always cool. All right, so until next time, which will be our next recording, by the way, will be our book club book, which was going to be The Legacy of Kings by Eleanor Herman, which we discussed at length earlier today. And then we don't know what September's book's going to be yet. We haven't really picked one. So open to suggestions. Feel free to tweet at us and we will pick something randomly. And then October, as Karen announced earlier, will be Magnus Chase. So there's lots of information for you guys to prepare to read this fall. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Karen.
Goodbye, guys.
Bye. Bye.